With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Step to the rhythm made out of brown paper, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble. The quadruple is on for Manchester City. Claude Puel has been sacked, and in Liberia, George Weah has been back among the goals. Good to have you, ladies and gentlemen, with us, the Football Ramble. Luke and Jimmy are here.
Hello. All right, good to be here.
A little bit of Ronnie Size to get things going.
Absolutely, mate.
You know?
Mercury Prize winning. New forms.
I am not.
The first Ronnie Size record. Oh. No, you're not, but that's still to come for you, Mark.
Not yet. No. It's something I can fall back on.
Yeah.
You know, those kind of things.
Your bars.
I've always been more of an In the Mode man, which is a follow-up album, but I know that's not a popular opinion, so people are going to pelter me for that. If anyone indeed knows what we're talking about, which they probably don't. Probably
I thought that was some style. I'm more of an In the Mode type of guy, just off the cuff.
No, if a lot of our listeners are into, you know, Bristol bass, drum and bass and jungle, they'll know what we're talking about. If they're not, they probably won't. So let's move on.
But they're probably used to that by now.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you something, we're all into glugging lots of Carabao now, aren't we?
Yeah, why not?
Has the branding exercise worked? Is that what your suggestion?
Yeah, I think I've only just recently figured out what it is. It is not a company that organises knockout tournament football.
Sorry, Marcus, what were you saying?
I feel energised just off the the energy in that sigh.
You don't look energised.
No, I don't look energised. Deathly ill.
Oh, red phlegm. It's not blood, but it's not good.
Oh, Jim, it's Monday.
No, that's the Carabao tagline. Is that...
They'll be very pleased with their mention here.
Yeah.
But anyway, the Carabao Cup final happened and Manchester
Marcus,
City won it.
Presumably Carabao are very happy with what happened with Kepa because people are still talking about it. Ordinarily, you'd think, I mean, being cynical here, you'd think it's a 0-0, it went to penalties, Man City won it, blah, 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 sort of boring. But because of this Kepa thing, it's running and running and running. And people are going to be saying he did this in the Carabao Cup final.
We will remember it for years.
We probably will.
Did you see what the goalkeeper did in the Carabao Cup final? It was absolutely hilarious, for example.
Unfortunately, people are still calling it the League Cup final, aren't they?
Yeah.
But, you know, they've had their mention on this
Rumble
show. But the Milk Cup was settled on penalties. And for those who remember. Kepa, that was the story, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
That was the story. And it's a great shame because Chelsea equipped themselves well, having been thumped 6-0. I mean, seldom do you get that when there's a kind of an outrageous result against two sides. And a kind of result that shouldn't be from one side's point of view. It tends not to be a repeat because even Sarri, people say, we can't change and so on. You can't go into it. Like, you just
and
can't.
Also, the atmosphere in a cup final is different as well. I think, you know, the City approach it with a bit more caution as well. And actually, you know, the sad thing, as you say, that will be forgotten is Chelsea showed so much character in the latter stages of the game and also in the entirety of extra time, I would argue. They looked like the more likely team to win it. They looked like, especially when they brought the subs on, they looked in control and sort of the most kind of together team. But then throwing that sort of mental curveball into a situation like that right at the death, it just changes the mentality of the game completely. Yeah. And Chelsea tried to PR it and say, oh, it was just a misunderstanding and Kepa was actually explaining that he didn't need to come off and he was fine. But that's clearly nonsense, clearly absolute nonsense.
They PR'd it quite well, thanks to Sarri, actually.
Well, he dealt with it any way he could. Before we get on to the Kepa thing, very quickly, just to pick up on something you guys said there, he didn't change the formation.
No.
But he did change slightly how they approached the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think of way Sarri likes to play, being like an Italian style tiki taka. They didn't play like that.
No,
they were happy to soak it up and be compact and all that kind of thing.
They didn't go pressing as well.
No, exactly. And the fact that he picked I know he's picked Emerson a lot in the League Cup this season, but the fact that he picked Emerson for the final ahead of Alonso, who hasn't been the best defensively recently, tells its own story. But so it feels a bit like. Well, actually, it's an extension, really, of what Jim said. We could be talking about all these things. We could be talking about how Hazard was brilliant. And
what
really
a job he did in that role.
Yeah, and one or two other bits and pieces. But we're not. We're going to talk about Kepa because it was an extraordinary situation, really.
It was, yeah. I mean, clearly, I felt that him being injured, I mean, to me, that was just by the by. Because as soon as he got Caballero out and up ready, stripped off, you thought, of course.
Yeah, he's a penalty shooter.
Of course.
Specialist.
And he used to play for them.
Yeah.
So that would get in Man City's heads. What a brilliant move. And I know there was that thing with the sort of the injury and whatnot, which seemed, I'm thinking that's coincidence that happened.
All
at
he needed
the same
was
time.
Some tonic water. He had some cramp. Get a bit of quinine in you, you'll be fine. Tonic water, put it in one of the Carabao Cup bottles if you want.
Maybe Carabao, you'll be. It's like a power up again, isn't it? Yeah.
Maybe that's what he had.
Yeah.
Maybe they were all on it.
Yeah.
With the Kepa situation, you know, he then says, no, I'm absolutely fine. Now, from Kepa's point of view, what I wonder is, was that communicated? Because it did seem like a plan bring on Caballero. And it makes sense if you've got that substitution.
Well, it's a good point, because if they had planned it before, then what Kepa's done is even worse.
Yeah.
Because he's gone back on it. But regardless of that, if it hasn't been planned in advance, and I suppose, I guess there's a chance it wasn't, The important point isn't whether he was injured or not, Marcus. I agree with you. The point is the manager.
Yeah.
And if you are going to royally mug off your manager for whatever reason in front of the, you know, the watching 90,000 or whatever it was and 81,000 and the assembled millions watching at home, I mean, there's no real way back from that. I mean, I can understand why Sarri PR'd it as he did in public.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I mean, regardless of the injury and regardless of Kepa's side of the story, there's a hierarchy at a football club, and the hierarchy is the manager makes the decisions. And given the fact that Sarri's been under such pressure publicly recently anyway, in many ways it's symbolic of the issue at Chelsea, the modern Chelsea, right? That would be straightforward, cut and dry back in the day. The manager would either put him in the reserve squad, make him train with, as they call it, the bomb squad for the next 3 months and say, thanks very much, we don't need you. But the club have got a history of not backing managers, and also he costs 71 million quid. So it's a difficult thing to do. If all things being equal, I think what should happen here is Kepa should, I know he's sort of tried to make amends a little bit on his social media feed, but what he should do is make an official apology and say that he backs the manager again and look after him, and he should take a fine, and he should take on the chin whatever Sarri decides to do, because Sarri is the manager. That's the only way Maurizio Sarri's authority is going to be restored. Sadly, I feel like that may not, none of that stuff may not happen.
Absolutely. I feel like as well, but regardless of, as you say, of the injury, of whatever the power dynamic there, your number is up on the board. Your number is up on the board. Get off the pitch.
Yeah.
You know, like,
Also,
the referee, I know the referee went over to Sarri to ask him what he wanted to do, but surely the referee has to go over and go, these are the basic rules of the game.
It's a booking if you delay it. But Sarri, and the reason we know this stuff isn't as they tried to PR afterwards is purely because of Sarri's reaction at the time,
man,
right?
Because
otherwise, he would have just gone, all right, okay, fine then.
Yeah.
But he didn't do that. If I was Kepa, I'd have come out straight afterwards and said, I forgot about the extra sub and extra time. I was trying to tell them I couldn't come off. We'd done three already.
Right. Yeah. Well, do you agree with Chris Sutton when he said, oh, he should never play for the club again?
Well, you know what? I mean,
it's not a terrible shout. It's a reasonable impression, by the way.
It is. The £71 million thing is obviously an issue, isn't it? But honestly, that is an absolute disgrace. If any of us were in Sarri's shoes, which obviously we will never be, surely, like, training with the reserves for the rest of the season would be the first thing that comes to mind. Like,
you got to earn your place back now. You disrespected the club,
but he is. I mean, you could argue that he's cost them the game there, because I mean, it was a weak save for, or attempted save for Aguero's penalty for one thing, but also, like I said earlier, that throws such a massive curveball into the mentality of that shootout. Chelsea were on top before that. They actually looked the stronger game. They looked harder to beat than City did it, like in a marginal way.
Yeah,
and that is what the story is, and that's obviously in everyone's heads. I mean, Vincent Kompany after the game, like he was as professional as he needed to be. When he was asked if he'd ever seen anything like that before, he basically involuntarily laughed and said, "You know, of course, I've never seen anything like that before," and then moved on. It's like the situation, it's absurd. Like, on this podcast, between us, we support miscellaneous, Arsenal, Portsmouth and Newcastle. And with that in mind, we can all say Chelsea are a joke. Like, it is a joke that they have people behaving like that.
Jim, transpose it across to the other side of the pitch.
It's hard to say Chelsea, one player.
But the situation with Sarri, like the whole season, the way that, you know, that this is repeatedly happening with managers.
Happened with Mourinho.
Yeah, happened with Conte. Yeah. Eating cigarettes on the side.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
That's Sarri, not Conte. But if you transpose the situation across to the other side of the pitch, Man City are a high-performing team, a lot of high-paid players. Edison was expensive. Can you imagine Edison doing that to Guardiola?
No.
It would never happen. It would never happen.
I just wonder if it was communicated beforehand. I'm guessing it wasn't. So if Sarri obviously had that in the back of his mind, let's bring on Caballero, because that is a good idea. Like, when you saw that, you thought, oh, of course, what a good move that would be. Now, he may well have chosen not to say that to Kepa, because what if they make all three substitutions and it goes to penalties? In the back of Kepa's mind, he's thinking, well, the manager doesn't think I should be here. Do you know what I mean? So maybe don't mention it to him. Maybe keep that really, really close to his chest.
Decent.
So I reckon Kepa's probably not aware of what he was trying to do. But for crying out loud, I don't know why Sarri is then back down when the referee's come over and says, well, hang on, what, something's got to give.
Yeah.
And he's given away. And then when Caballero went back into his seat looking quite bemused, Sarri then looked like to have a go at Caballero.
Yeah.
And that was a bit odd. And Caballero can't enter the field of play until Kepa's come off.
One of the things that the manager could have done, a bit of an extreme reaction, but given that it was about to go to penalties anyway, and you're not going to have 11 penalties, I mean, when does that ever happen?
Taking off an outfield player.
Just say referee, send him off then. If he's not going to come off, I'm substituting him, send him off. And substitute off an outfield player for a goalkeeper. But the problem is,
that'd have been amazing.
But the thing is, that's, people who listen to this will automatically go, well, that's ridiculous. That'll cause such ructions in this camp. Well, it's hard to think of a more sour note that's ended on anyway.
Yeah. But I think when you said, you mentioned those two words, modern football, and you're right, years ago it would have been dealt with, but it shows you the power that Kepa knows. Kepa it will be there until...
It'll be there longer than Sarri, and that's
what
completely. You need to say.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, absolutely right. And it shows you that Sarri's probably quite defeated. The fact that he gave in...
The fact that he sort of very clearly went to walk down the tunnel and thought better of it as well.
Yeah, he gave in. Because there was still a cup to be won, and he's never won a major trophy. And then in the press conference after, to be fair to him, in terms of if you're in the Chelsea camp, the way he came out and PR'd it was very good. He had a little chuckle, I don't want to talk about football. No, it was a misunderstanding injury. For him to manage to go from one mood to the other was actually quite impressive.
Yeah, really,
I mean,
was.
You wouldn't get Conte doing that, but then again, Conte would have walked on the pitch, grabbed him by the ear, and hauled him off. You know? Yeah. So that wouldn't
but
have happened.
Listen, Kepa, we've dug you out a bit there, but we were staring down the barrel of having nothing to talk about this game.
Yeah.
So, and we've just done 9 minutes on that.
In a way, we'd like to thank you. Yeah. I'd like to mention Raheem Sterling's penalty.
Yes.
That
was confident.
Gareth Southgate sitting in the stands going, "You're welcome, Manchester City."
Yeah.
it was a great way to finish the shootout.
It was, and Hazard's penalty deserves a mention.
Oh,
as
my
well.
Goodness. Yeah, actually, well, you expect that from Hazard,
but you know, to execute it so well. I'm not sure I like the view of the penalty.
I was about to bring this up. I love it.
I
love it. It works really well, but I'm annoyed at why they've done it, because the reason they've done it is because that's what kids are used to looking at FIFA.
Yeah. Is that the reason?
I reckon it is.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
I don't know that.
Okay. I mean, it's an interesting angle. I think that...
But it's a much clearer angle for the viewer to be able to see what's happening.
Yeah.
That weird acute angle from the side of the pitch...
Mm. One we've used to seen...
Exactly.
Years.
And it's... It's fanciful. It's ridiculous, really, because you'll see either the penalty will go in, or it'll be saved, or it'll be missed. But you never see how exactly that's happened until you see the replay.
Mm.
So why not just show it from that angle anyway? I have to admit, the first couple of penalties I found it jarring, but after that, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I agree.
It shows the quality of the penalties as well.
Yeah,
the
Hazard one.
The Hazard one was absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I know.
So I'm all for it.
What about Man City, though? Another trophy win. Yeah. I mean, they love it, don't they?
Just hoovering them up.
Yeah,
It's the first one they've retained, I think.
Apparently so,
The quadruple's on.
Yeah, I mean, Gundogan was really interesting talking about that in the post-match, because he just said, I think it's not really ideal for us to think about that. So that's fine for other people to talk about it, but they can't be going around going, yeah, we're going to win the quadruple, because that is mad.
But there's something, isn't there, about Manchester City, we will speak about Liverpool in just a moment, when you can tell that they say, well, we don't want to talk about the league title. The league title.
Yeah.
It's festering away with Manchester City, this idea of the quadruple. I know there was talk about it last season when they won the League Cup and the Premier League. But this season, again, they just look like they're having a good time. The pressure's off in a weird sense. It will be an incredible achievement if they manage to do it. But they'll look at themselves in the FA Cup and think, that is very winnable.
Mm.
The Premier League, again, we'll mention Liverpool, but they have the best squad in the land.
Yeah,
it's really the Champions League, to me, which is the most difficult
one. Well, it's whether the trials of those other competitions affects them so much in the Champions League, because obviously depending on the draw you get, sooner or later you're going to come up against one of the most draining games that you can.
Of course.
But a huge problem City have now, though, is that Aymeric Laporte and Fernandinho went off injured, and Pep Guardiola saying they both could be out for a number of weeks. And obviously we know they don't have any other defensive-minded midfielders at all at the club.
They can't win. So, I don't think they can win all of the trophies without Fernandinho.
Yeah.
He's too important. Mm. And we saw it when he missed a few games earlier in the season. There's other players like Stones, who he tried in there, and Gundogan, who he tried in there as well. They're good players for
Danilo,
different reasons.
Kevin De Bruyne is a...
But they can't bring the all-round skill to that role that Fernandinho brings, like receiving the ball in tight areas, giving it simple, but also covering the back four and all that kind of stuff. So
it's playing in Europe, isn't it, when you're playing against quality opposition and they're coming at you.
They need it.
Yeah, absolutely right. Let's go to the Premier League then. Manchester United and Liverpool didn't score any goals either. It looked like Jurgen Klopp said to Solskjaer after the match, "In hell, what a shit game."
Did he?
It looked like he said
something,
sort of
he said something to him.
It was something along those lines, and then they shook hands. I mean, the story of that match was the injuries.
Yeah, it was weird, wasn't it? Because it disrupted the rhythm of it so much.
It's so strange.
It started off with a bang, didn't it? It started off being quite a good game, and then it sort of petered out as the personnel changed so much. I was annoyed that David De Gea didn't get himself sent off.
Just to spice things up.
An outfield player in goal in that game.
Yeah,
that
would have been. Well, yeah, that is true, actually.
I was quite impressed by United's defensive quality, really. I mean, Salah, Firmino particularly, had quiet games. And you would be tempted to say, oh, you know, well, you know, they can't be brilliant every week. But you know, I thought that the defensive line of United looked pretty solid. Shaw was absolutely fantastic.
He was.
Pogba put in a real shift going back. And that's how you know.
Not good enough for Graham Souness, though.
No, well, quite. That's how you know that Solskjaer is more than meets the eye with him, because Pogba really wants to play for him. And you could say, okay, well, he really wants to play for... He should want to play anyway. But he didn't do it under Mourinho. Mm-hmm. The irony being that Mourinho's a much more defensive coach than Solskjaer, yet Pogba didn't put any sort of shift in at all going back, to the point where Mourinho wasn't happy with him. Now, I know there could be other political reasons for that, and indeed there were, from what I've heard. But at the same time, he's showing now that he's capable of putting in a shift going back towards his own goal, and that he understands that you're not going to win every game 2-0 or 3-0. When you play against a good team, even at home, you need to do your doggies, you know?
Yeah, I wonder with Solskjaer, I looked at him and his demeanour on the touchline and all the stuff you're saying there, Luke, about managing to get Pogba to put in a bit of a shift that we hadn't seen under Mourinho and whatnot. And I thought to myself, is Solskjaer... I mean, he's not been in the job that long, and I understand that he's at Manchester United, and I think Ruud Gullit was mentioning this, that after Ferguson was always going to be a huge task. David Moyes didn't really acknowledge or maybe not acknowledge, but didn't size up the job properly. It was just too big a job for him, as it is for the vast majority of managers.
Yeah.
Van Gaal, it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks. He's got his way and he's going to come in and do that way. The same with Mourinho, to a lesser extent. Solskjaer is more of the ethos of the club and so on. But that aside, I just wonder with Solskjaer, as I say, looking at his demeanour and so on, I thought, is this guy actually a great manager for this newer generation of younger players? People say are a little bit more soft. Again, make what you will of that, but managers like Mourinho and so on get annoyed that players are not tough. He wants to manage the likes of Terry and Lampard, who, weird to think now, they're considered quite old school.
Yeah.
And he can batter them and really hammer them and get something, a reaction from them. Whereas now, players, seems more about the individual and so on. And I wonder if Solskjaer, with his more carrot than stick approach, perhaps... He has the stick, clearly, to use. Yeah. And I think that's
a good point. I think that's probably accurate. But I think we need to wait and see when they go for a difficult patch, how he reacts to that, because we don't know enough about it. I mean, look, there are people on Twitter who'll tell you they know all about Mulder. I'm not one of those people, so I don't know what he's managed to do in difficult times, or even if he's had difficult times when he's been managing in Norway. But that point about the old school thing and how that Mourinho wants to dig players out, and we've heard situations of certain players been reduced to tears by Mourinho, and I'm sure other managers as well.
Yeah.
The reason it's easy to use that as a stick to beat modern footballers. Oh, they're soft. They're this, that. Really?
Yeah, rightly or wrongly, by the way.
Saying that is nonsense anyway, because really employment across the country has changed in a huge way since those times. I mean, you can't, as a manager of a team in an office, go in and start shouting at people. Yeah. It's just not acceptable anymore. You know, that kind of thing just doesn't go on anymore.
Yeah.
So there's no reason it should go on at employment at a football club as well. So
I mean, Pete Donaldson does shout at us, but he's not our manager.
No, and he doesn't. We don't really listen. So,
yeah, and also, it feels like he's shouting at people that none of us can see.
Yeah, that's probably true. So it's only a reflection of the wider society. That's a fairly boring point, but one that's worth
mentioning. No, I think
so. So the game itself, I thought Jim sent a message over at sort of halfway through the first half saying nothing's really going on, but it's good. And I agree. I think it was one of those games where it felt like it was high quality, but they sort of cancelled each other out. It wasn't one of those boring... I'm getting to the point now with the top teams where I don't know if you really see boring nil-nils anymore.
Mm.
Like, do you remember about... This is a very, very broad point, but a number of years ago, perhaps around the time we started the podcast, there were a lot of stalemates between the top teams.
Yeah.
And then we went through a phase of, it felt like, where the top teams' games were mad. Mm. There were goals all over the place. And now we're sort of settling again. Mm. But I don't think they're the same types of nil-nils as the ones back then.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while since we've even heard the term cancel each other out.
I've just said it.
Yeah, well,
I'm bringing sexy back.
You're bringing stalemates back, which I don't know if you want to do.
No, but it was an all right one. It was enough to get involved in.
It wasn't quite a pulsating nil.
No, it wasn't. But the players were dropping like flies, so there's always something to get
that
interested in.
That was obviously weird, wasn't it? And I wonder, actually, certainly in the second half at least, and it was Shaqiri's very cynical foul on an already injured Marcus Rashford that made me think this. But I wonder if in the second half it was Liverpool's priority to not lose the game.
I think so, because Ruud Gullit, lovely to see him on the television, especially against opposite Alan Shearer, who he mugged off at Newcastle. Yeah. It's always, I always love to remind myself when they're on TV. I know it's been years ago and I know they've worked together many times, yeah, but it's always an enjoyable thought in the back of my head. Should Liverpool be worried about their performance or the result? Because I know what you mean. They just thought, I think they thought to themselves, you know, okay, maybe this will do, because they weren't pushing, they weren't going all guns blazing.
I wonder if actually in a weird way that shows a little bit of maturity.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I'm not sure. Not sure if they were a bit kind of...
If they had pushed too much, they could have lost it. Although it's an interesting one, because with Lukaku out wide and Rashford clearly on sort of like one leg.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that they were down, that they were a little...
Although Chris Smalling had a chance late on that annoyed me, where he, you know, he really, really should have been... He was annoyed at himself for not having a swing at that late cross when he should have done. But I just feel like if you're at a team like Man United, you've got to lead better than that. Like that was a perfect sort of microcosmic example of why Smalling isn't a top level defender for me. That
mm-hmm. He's been all right. He's been in all right form though.
He has, but so, like you've got to step up there.
Someone was on the radio. I was on the radio last week, and someone texted in saying they went swimming with dolphins, and Red Hullet was there.
Oh yeah,
and I was like, oh, that'd be annoying, because you've been looking forward to swimming with dolphins.
I know what you mean.
And the last thing you want is like a famous person there distracting your attention away, because you're like, oh God, it's Red Hullet. Especially if you're a big football fan. I think the last thing you want when you're swimming with dolphins is a famous person there.
Yeah, I agree with you, because when people say, oh, what was it like on holiday? We saw Red Hullet.
Yeah, that's gone front and centre, hasn't it, straight away?
Dolphins are terribly randy creatures, though.
Demi
Moore once had an experience with one.
Is that right?
Yeah, they also have prehensile penises, which means they can grab things with them. They're awful, awful beasts.
I reckon Rude Hullet's quite excitable in the same way. I think...
So he'd take the attention of all the dolphins away, probably.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, whoever had that experience should let us know what happened between Rude and the dolphins. But I think that Rude Hullet... Rude, if you're listening, if you're going to plan a holiday and you're going to do things like that, make sure you book the whole...
This was years ago as well, apparently, so you probably would have been even more famous then.
Yeah, make sure that you just book the tour guide on your own and there's no one else there.
Speaking of famous, did you see that Alex Ferguson was sat with Ian McShane?
He really?
Yeah.
I didn't notice that.
Great, very interesting. I imagine, like, I don't think he's getting that seat when he's Lovejoy. You know, he's earned that now that he's got some Hollywood.
Deadwood, Shaq TV. He's in Game of Thrones as well.
He's all over the place. Yeah. Very good actor.
I mean, I'll chuck in John Wick.
Is he John Wick? I haven't seen it. But I think that means we must be taking an ad break now. We're talking about John Wick.
Big time. We'll be back after the break with more Premier League.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the air in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
¿Vos sabés del Barcelona?
un montón de cosas que yo no sé.
And he told me that you know more about Barcelona than me.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. It's lovely to have you with us. Still, it's time for emails with Jimmy C.
Yes, oh, that's me. It is. Hang on a minute. We've got to find it. There we go. Say I'm the only bee in your bunny.
Not the bees! Ah! You've got mail.
Bad bees! Ah, okay. Right. So, a lot of beef.
Jim, you should let listeners know you've got a cough and a cold, yeah, and that's why you feel sound a little bit under par.
Yeah, I think they've probably worked that out by now from the off-mic coughing. Sorry about that. I'm doing my best. Right, so morning, gents. Think a clarification may be required from Jim in last week's preview show as to whether he meant to say AT-AT or AT-AT in his analogy.
Oh, yeah. I call him
Star Wars.
Yeah, at the time.
I missed that.
So he said AT-AT, and I knew what you meant, but I didn't question it.
Yeah.
And then I thought to myself on the way home, I grew up calling them AT-ATs.
I was called them an AT-AT as well.
Yeah, all-terrain
attack vehicle.
All terrain attack thing. What it stands for.
Connor D says, I would like to point out that one is a four-legged machine and one is a telecommunications company. Count the legs. That's from Connor D. So yeah, you're right. I messed up.
It was
one of those brain farts that happens. You see them regularly from footballers.
It's never normally a problem when a brain fart happens on the show because one of the other three will pick it up.
Mm.
But in that rare occasion, that didn't happen.
Yeah, we all let ourselves down. Yeah.
On that, this is from Matty Honeyman. Hi, guys. Great show as ever. I really enjoyed Luke's comments on the last show about the Burnley/Spurs game where he said, can they go to the well and pull something out of the fire?
There we go.
Kind regards, Matty. I mean, the digs all over the place from the listeners.
I mean, that does
again, I see why Pete gets so angry.
That does make me sound shit, to be fair.
Yeah, well, you know.
It's a mixed metaphor.
It is. We've all done it.
It's a bit like when I interviewed Terry Brown, the Aldershot manager. Well, you know, football's it's got a nasty habit of coming back round and stabbing you in the foot.
Yeah.
Ugh.
It happens, man. Yeah. Listen, we do about 500 podcasts a year.
We do.
Matt Honeyman, who I think is a regular email, I recognise his name, cut us a bit of slack.
Exactly. I know.
Well, the honeymoon period is over.
Yeah. cut us a bit of rope.
Sticking the boot in is very much a theme. In this email.
You got any more positive ones?
No. Oh, okay, honestly, fine. This is a sticking the boot in
we're more
theme.
All
right, go on, let's have it.
We've ever been.
Is it
hi,
nice
guys.
Then?
Just sat here pondering the United-Liverpool game, and I feel that the recent spate of United injuries is a result of the changeover of Jose's tactics to Ollie's. Jose's teams never played with pressing and counter-attacking, so with the players being used to Jose's tactics and slow style of play for 2 and a bit years, having been playing the Ollie way for 6 to 8 weeks, is that starting to catch up on the United players' bodies? That's from Chris Sandall in Norwich.
Yeah.
I mean, what else can we blame Jose Mourinho for? I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, is there any...
Well, I don't think
is there any fairness in that?
I don't think it's a question of the players aren't fit enough, is there? I mean, Mourinho's a top-level coach, and he's got a top-level fitness coach as well. I'm not sure about that. I mean, the reality is they've got a very good record under Solskjaer, and they've only come unstuck against pretty
PSG.
Good teams. Yeah, PSG, Liverpool. And even if you want to call it unstuck, because they've got a draw
got a point.
Liverpool. Yeah, yeah. So
Burnley, got a
oh,
point.
True, yeah, exactly.
any more beef, Jim?
Yeah.
We need to deal with
this. A couple bits more. Actually, this one is... more sticking the boot in from our end.
Okay.
Sorry, Chelsea fans.
you're not sorry, that's the thing.
Not at all. Dear Ramblers, further to your chat about overcooked / underprepared / aggressively volleyed pies at football matches, I thought I would give you some details about a very strange occurrence that was bestowed upon me at the Chelsea-Malmo game on Thursday. Prior to the game, I got myself a chicken and leek pie with a healthy portion of chips from a stand in the lower section of the West Stand at Stamford Bridge. I brought my pie to my seat and proceeded to consume it during the first half of the match. Obviously, I did not think much of this action, as it is well known that eating pies at football matches is a very frequent and normal occurrence. However, at the beginning of half-time, I placed my remaining chips on the floor in order to stretch my back. At this point... yeah, lovely detail, that. At this point, the man sat next to me, West Stand Lower, Block 3, Row 4, Seat 67, proceeded to ask if I would be keeping hold of my chips for the second half. I responded yes, as I wanted to nibble on a few during the remainder of the match. I believe that he was asking if he could have a few, so I proceeded to offer him a few of the chips. He said no, and that the reason he was asking was that it was antisocial for me to have my pie and chips in the stands and that the stench was upsetting him.
Ooh.
Naturally, I was stunned by this response and proceeded to explain why I thought he was being unreasonable. Anyway, he was not backing down, and I proceeded to discard the remainder remainder of my chips after getting bored of the argument. I was wondering whether such esteemed football men as yourselves agree that having a pie and chips during a match is normal, and furthermore, whether the strange man sat next to me was being totally unreasonable. A shocked and confused Chelsea, sorry, fan, Zach Benny. Zach, you are absolutely right there. That is mad. That man is...
Snowflake.
Yeah, he is. He's probably annoyed that Uber are ruining his livelihood, as we've said many times.
Jim, you are going to get so much stick from Chelsea fans today.
It's fine.
I think that's a... the guy sounds a bit like a sociopath, really. The thing is, you have to be considerate to the people around you, though. So for all we know, Zach might be a really messy, noisy, smelly eater.
True.
And it's annoyed him.
Mm. So he'll be doing weird things with the chips.
If you're listening and you're the other guy on the other end of that argument, get in touch and we'll put it to a vote.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I've got one more.
One more from Jimmy.
Just to blow my ats up. Hi guys, love the show. It was interesting in Luke talking about judging Sarri not only on his time in England. I think that's completely fair, but was wondering why the history of homophobia and sexism that Sarri had in Italy hasn't been mentioned by anyone in England, and how top clubs can keep employing such bigoted characters in 2019. Also, his cigarette and the touchline thing is just deeply, deeply embarrassing. That's from Christopher Knight. Chelsea.
The simple answer is I didn't know about it. I have to go look it up. Yeah. If you want to get a European take on that, you can listen to On the Continent on Wednesday, and maybe we'll put it to James Horncastle, find out what he thinks about it. But we'll have to find out some detail. Jim, it's unsettled me how professional and serious the email section is when you do it.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I was wholly unprepared for that.
Uh-huh. All agreed.
Can we get Pete back soon?
We can. We can move on to the Premier League, or go back to the Premier League, where Leicester City lost 4-1 at home to Crystal Palace. Claude Puel has been sacked.
Yes.
He's gone. Let's talk of Brendan Rodgers.
Can I do a quick joke?
Please.
They were saying Buell.
Well, it was it was a duel that he was never going to win. Yeah, but yeah, it's Claude Puel. He's sort of finally gone.
You wanted, Leicester fans.
Do you know? I wonder that had they have lost that game 2-1, would he have been sacked? Do you know what I mean?
Did you watch the game though?
I saw it.
It was fascinating.
It was.
I mean, that was a 1-0 to Leicester on the balance of play. It's absolutely fascinating.
Well, that's it. Like, I just wonder that when the board have thought to themselves, right, not going that well with this manager. Are we going to do it? Are we not? Are we doing at 2-1, if they think, if we lose 2-1, all right, well, maybe we'll give them next week. Do you know what I mean? I wonder how impulsive it is when you actually get an embarrassing result. I mean, they could have someone lined up.
There definitely is a feeling of the straw that breaks the camel's back.
And exactly.
Speaking of having people lined up, there's talk of Brendan Rodgers, but apparently Brendan Rodgers has already said he won't consider moving till the end of the season.
Yeah, I think that's probably...
So they'll have to either interim someone.
Appleton, maybe?
Possibly. Is he still there?
I mean, he was mentioned in the running.
Oh, he must still be there. And there's also been talk of Benitez as well.
Newcastle fans would be gutted.
Yeah, but presumably Benitez just wants to get out of there. So that's probably why. If they want to make an appointment straight away, they can. But just to going back to the decision, obviously we've been critical of Leicester fans on the show more recently. And now that Puel's moved on, we could perhaps look back at it in the rearview mirror with a bit more in the round, I suppose. I mean, they've been on a terrible run.
Mm.
I take the point that a few people, Leicester fans, got in touch with me about the League Cup, where if they played a stronger team against a weakened Man City team, they could have beaten them. They came very close to beating them anyway, and they would have got Burton in the semi-final, and they could have been in the cup final yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
For a club team like Leicester, that's massive.
It's huge.
I could understand why that's frustrating. That's something that comes up time and time again among fans of clubs of this size. We want a cup run. We should be doing better in the cups. We should prioritise the cups more because we know realistically we're not going to be relegated.
It's the best they can hope for,
etc.
And
the final point is just quickly that he had that issue with Kasper Schmeichel last week, but there's also a feeling that he's not the guy to turn around a bad run. He's just not inspirational enough. Now, I don't know if that's true. I can understand why people don't warm to him, because a lot of football is about the cult of personality these days. A lot of the big name managers are personal brands in their own right, and obviously he isn't that. He's just not that kind of guy. So, but the thing is, I do feel a bit sorry for him, but on the other hand, I haven't had to sit through watching Leicester. So, I mean, maybe
it was an incredibly strange performance from them. James Maddison in particular, his end product seemed to be way off.
Well, he's drifted. Yeah, he started the season so well, and he's drifted. And really, a game at home to Crystal Palace, who are very much in that mould of team that, you know, you would see a Crystal Palace game at home and say that's a winnable game for us. Oh, yeah. It just has to be.
But to be hammered as well. Yeah. I think Boyle's comments after the game, I know that he's quite a softly spoken man, and I've talked about my love for his voice. Mm. But that aside, his comments are a bit, I can understand why the fans are a bit upset. Yeah, it's too relaxed. And yeah, I mean, I understand not all people are blood, guts and thunder. I get that. But it reminded me a little bit of the former Southampton manager. Was it Manuel
Puel?
Yeah.
Pellegrino,
who was a bit sort of, yeah, but I'm still the manager, I'm still here. It was too relaxed, yeah. The whole thing. And I just thought, I understand that a great manager might not be able to give great interviews and all the rest of it, but you know, it's a bit like being a prime minister. You know, again, we'll just you need to be better at your own PR and all that kind of stuff.
And the kind of thing that's interesting, I mean, of course, on the cup point, Leicester were knocked out of the FA Cup by Newport as well, which is
awesome. Yeah.
But on that, if you watch the Sunderland documentary, I've got no particular reason to stick the boot in the Simon Grayson. I'm sure he's a lovely guy, and you know, all the rest of it. I was absolutely stunned how uninspirational he was behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And then when Chris Coleman comes in, and you make what you will of Chris Coleman, he's had some success in his career, he's had some difficulties as well. He was exactly as you described there. He was properly a people person. He was getting to know everyone in the staff. He was a good firm handshake. It was, you could see people, football players, look at him going, right, I can work for him. No, and that didn't work out for him either. But to me, there were lots of different reasons why Sunderland are in the situation they were in. But I was absolutely stunned that Simon Grayson was the same behind the scenes as he was to camera, because we know through bitter experience a lot of the time, it's not easy to be great on camera. It can be very, very difficult. I wonder if Claude Puel was just a fairly uninspirational figure, and at key moments, the FA Cup, the League Cup, this run they're on in the Premier League, the issue with Kasper Schmeichel just meant that he was toast.
I also feel like you got to look at a game like that, I think it's actually pretty tactically naive to overload on the front foot as they did, and just allow a team with such sort of counter-attacking talent with Zaha, Townsend and Batshuayi in there to just do what they did. You play right into their hands.
Batshuayi was loving that goal. Like, that's all you need. When they say all you need is one to go in off your backside, you knew nothing about that.
I thought he did quite well to react, you could argue. But yeah, what a win for Roy Hodgson. Became the oldest manager to manage in the Premier League. 71 years and 198 days old.
Took it from Bobby Robson.
He did, yes. Palace, they're up to 13th now on 30 points. We expected Palace to start pulling away. It looks as though they're about to do that. The same with Burnley as well. What a win. Their great run continues. Unbelievable stuff. Pochettino in Mike Dean's. You don't do that to a man like Mike Dean.
No. I'm absolutely desperate to know what Mike Dean said.
Mm. Well, I think, reading is hard enough as it is, especially...
But Spurs' assistant manager, whose name escapes me at the moment, it might be...
Is it Pedro Mendes?
I can't remember his name. Maybe. You could hear him saying to Mike Dean, you can't say that. You shouldn't say that. You can't say that. And Mike Dean's going, go away, go away, go away. Mike Dean... being Mike Dean, I'm absolutely sure of it, said something a little bit naughty or a little bit cheeky, and they both exploded. Pochettino afterwards said, I shouldn't have done it, it was my fault, it's an overreaction, etc.
And it was.
Absolutely, but what I'm saying is, I would be fascinated to know what Mike Dean said, because if he said anything inflammatory at all, to me, that is a dereliction of duty from a referee.
Did you hear the rumour?
No, I haven't.
The rumour is that he said the Llorente substitution didn't work out before you did it. Right. But I mean, that's like a Twitter rumour. So it could be absolutely anything.
Say that again.
The rumour is that Mike Dean said, oh, that Llorente substitution didn't work out before you did it. And that's presumably in response to Pochettino making some angry comments.
I can't imagine.
I can't imagine it. It's impossible.
But if I could imagine any referee saying it, it would have
well,
been
well, indeed. Because, I mean, a good example would be the Jay Rodriguez thing. Oh, you weren't like this before you played for England.
That's Clattenburg.
Oh, right. Well, so, yeah.
I was going to say Clattenburg's and Deeney are different.
But they are similar in a sense.
But hang on, this is not about Dean. This is about Pochettino. Yeah. He shouldn't be doing that. Whatever Mike Dean said. Now, fair enough, Pochettino has apologised, but the reason why Pochettino reacted like that is, in his own words, Spurs have blown the title.
But I think that was a clever move from Pochettino to say that. I'll tell you why. I think that the pressure they've been under, the fact they've had their... You know, their best striker out injured. They've had issues with personnel. They've been pulled into this title race. If he says that to his team, maybe he's just seeing them getting too hot up about it. Maybe he's just saying behind the scenes, we should relax a bit. Now he can say to them, say in public, so the players can see it, title's gone now.
Don't have a go at Deeney.
No, when you have a go at a man like Mike Dean, though, you've gone too far. He's lost the dressing room pot after that.
Yeah.
The only man there to see is Dino.
Yeah.
I think there is an argument, though, that perhaps in chasing the game and trying to win it, they've almost forgotten not to lose it.
Well,
because by
they've got to
show,
they've got to go to win. They've got to go to
they
win.
They do have to go to win. But easier said than done when Tom Heaton's in goal.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got to go to win, but you've within that attempt to win, you've also got to remember to keep it tight enough that you don't go and lose the game, which is exactly what they did. And obviously, Burnley got a little bit of fortune with the scuff in the build-up to Ashley Barnes' goal.
Well, they got fortunate with the corner as well, by the way.
Yeah, they did. But I mean, those decisions can happen.
Absolutely. And I always say this.
It's not a big one.
In modern football, the way the scrutiny is these days and the way referees are demoted and taken out of rotation, to me, by the way, not enough, but it does happen. The amount of scrutiny, the amount of cameras, a referee can't really lose you the game. If the referee loses you the game, it's because you haven't done enough. Mm. I think it's a convenient excuse. And you're right what you say there with the corner. It was a poor decision, it looked to me. I don't know why people were saying it was a little bit difficult to work it out. To me, it definitely came off the player. And so... That's a fact, but of course they didn't lose the game because of that.
Yeah,
they lost the game, so didn't take a.
It's frustrating for Spurs because they could have been what would they have been?
2 points off the top, they would have been.
Three points off Liverpool, two points off Manchester.
Yeah. I mean, they're 6 points off now, which isn't unassailable.
I know, but it's unlikely. It's very, very frustrating if you're a Spurs fan, and that is a chance gone. Really,
I still think though, Marcus, 6 points off the top with 11 games left. You're not out of it.
Still in there.
I don't think... The reason I said what I said about Pochettino is because I don't think he thinks they're out of it either.
All right. A bit like Ashley Barnes and the Austria national team, there's still a chance.
Yes.
There's still...
I would love that.
We'd all love it.
I was surprised to hear that was even possible.
Yeah, he's played once for their under-20s, which I think was a substitute.
I haven't spent enough time researching Ashley Barnes' career, even when he was linked with Chelsea that time. I like Barnes. I think he's good...
So you don't research Ashley Barnes and you don't know anything about Mulder?
No.
What are you doing on a football podcast?
I know.
Mulder is bad if it's in your house, but if it's in the Norwegian Football League,
you
it's okay.
You started that without thinking where you were going. And that's why I admire it.
A cheese route.
A lot of people would think about that in their mind and go, no, I'm not going to go with that because I don't know where I'm going with it.
A lot of people think about it in their mind and go, I think I'll listen to something else.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's go for a quick break then, Jim, and hopefully everyone forgets it when we come back. See you in a minute.
Sets up the dubious penalty shot.
Welcome back, dear friends. Now then, the preview show, sponsored by Bet365, will be out on Thursday. We need a new person in the betting hot seat, Luke Moore.
Yes, we do. Chris King, your time has come to an end. You let us all down, and yourself, trying to get a Spurs win. Didn't happen. Yeah. So, although
they were long live a different king.
Yeah, quite. They were drawing at half time, which is what we wanted, but they didn't go on to win the game. So, we need a new one. Show@thefootballramble.com is the email with best bet in the title, and we'll pick a new one for Thursday.
We will do. Now, then, it's championship time. Norwich beat Bristol City 3-2. They came back from being 2-1 down. Great win for Norwich. Lovely winner as well. They're getting the goals against a side like Bristol City. Don't concede too many. A good win for them, Jim.
It's a great win for them. And also, they look confident, don't they? At this stage of the season, it tends to be... I'm astounded by the consistency of this as well. A team sort of emerges as the team that are playing the free-flowing sort of Barcelona of the Championship style football. When Leicester came up, they did it. When Bournemouth
came up, they did it.
When Fulham did do that, and Norwich are doing that now as well.
And do you know what, actually?
And obviously Wolves last season.
Of course. And Wolves is a rare situation where they've come up and they've just taken to the Premier League like a duck to water. Yes, the big signings have helped and so on, but with the example of Fulham this season, throwing lots and lots of money at it doesn't always work. But when you see Norwich playing like that and the football they're playing, a part of me does sort of think, and I'm reminded of Fulham last season, where you sort of think, oh, that'll all have to end if you go up. And it's weird, isn't it? It's so weird that actually a side like Norwich, who play quite exciting stuff, if they get promoted, then it's so hard to shift from one style of football to the other. So I wonder if, because say take Middlesbrough, beat QPR 2-0, they're not conceding many, they don't score that many, they're still in contention for automatic promotion, but you would probably say playoff at the moment. I wonder if in a weird way they're more equipped for the Premier League. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, of course. And we've almost arguably seen that with Cardiff this season.
Yes. Definitely.
But the top two automatic places are surely going to go to either Norwich, Leeds, or Sheffield United.
Well, Sheffield United, big win at West Brom.
It's massive for them. I'll comment on that in a second. But the Norwich thing really, very quickly. Last season, they couldn't put any consistency together. They kept going for these runs of being really poor under Farker, and the second half of the season in particular, they were bad. They ended up finishing mid-table. They finished about 14th. So it's pleasing for Norwich fans to see them being consistent this year and really tweaking it, learning from their mistakes. I think now they've lost 1 in 8 in the league.
Yeah.
So it's good. On the Middlesbrough, on the West Brom thing, great win for Sheffield United. But the interview with Darren Moore afterwards was fascinating. As he said, oh, it's a long time since we've gone without scoring at home. Yep. I think it's right. I don't know exactly how long, but it sounds right to me.
But they're scoring a lot of goals, West Brom.
They are.
Yeah.
And he said to us, it just looked like a game too far.
Yeah.
We were a bit jaded. We didn't get going. And that's worrying because we know the game's come thick and fast in the Championship. They are the best placed outside of those top three to do something in the automatic promotion places. And they go away to Leeds next. So
they do.
They need to sort themselves out. They've got a week. I think it's a week anyway. And they need to reset themselves and go to Leeds because that's going to be very, very hard. If West Brom win at Leeds, it's open again. Why?
It is, yeah. Well, Sheffield United, it's a chance for Sheffield United to put a little bit of distance. But they are playing the Steel City Derby. I think it's next Monday.
What a week it's going to be in the Championship.
It is, yeah. Middlesbrough beating QPR 2-0, as we said earlier. And they have a game in hand on the top two and would move to just 4 points off them if they were to win it. I know Leeds have got a game in hand as well. But poor old QPR. Now, do you remember at the start of the season they had a disaster and we were thinking, oh, McLaren, they're shipping goals and whatnot. Then they turned it round and actually started playing quite well. Well, they've lost 7 on the bounce in the league. The last win they had was on Boxing Day.
So it was Portsmouth in the Cup.
It was in the Cup, but in the league,
I was just trying to get a mention of him in there.
Yeah, don't worry, your statutory mention is the box is ticked. Poor old QPR and McLaren.
Yeah,
that's
you wonder if QPR is in that mould of Claude Puel, where you think, can he turn it around? Now, I know they started off badly, but they didn't lose.
But they did turn it around for a bit.
But they didn't lose loads of games in a row. They lost 2 or 3 here and there, and they had a big defeat against West Brom earlier in the season. They've not gone, this is the worst run they've had all season. And I always think to myself, you know, possibly unfairly, because he's won titles in Holland. He's a coach, not a manager.
Mm.
And you wonder whether he's got that personal people side to his game, the manager side of the game to turn it around. Because a lot of football, a lot of anything, is about having confidence.
He was very unlucky not to take Derby up. But that seems to be like a more of a one-off.
True. Mm. But you know, I don't want to get like proper football man and be sort of antiquated about it. But there is something to be said, I think, for when you're in a bad run, you just empathise with the situation. So you go to the training ground.
Yeah.
Everyone feels probably that it doesn't matter how much you work on that shape or that set piece or that training drill there, it's not going to work unless someone gets right amongst you. Alex Ferguson was a brilliant coach and a brilliant manager because he combined all those things. He had a great assistant manager to do all that coaching stuff, but he could understand people, and a lot of it's to do with that. And I wonder whether that's the area of management Steve McLaren falls short in.
You need to be an inspirational leader.
Exactly.
You need to have confidence. You need to have heard. You need to have confidence, and you need to have people who believe in you. And on that note, we go to the WhatsApp group.
Oh, yes. We've got a little jingle for that, Pete. WhatsApp! For God's sake!
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Now, we mentioned George Weir at the start of the show, speaking of inspirational leaders. Well, this was from last week, but my goodness, I thought we cannot ignore this. Mm. George Weir, the president of Liberia and former FIFA World Footballer of the Year, still plays when he can on Saturdays, according to the BBC. Mike Thompson, reporting for the BBC, said that he went to Liberia to interview George Weah, and he said that Weah was apparently meant to be in Madagascar at one particular moment, but instead played a game of football.
Why wouldn't you?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Why the hell not? Thompson, the reporter, he said he went to the Ministry of Defence, and he was thinking, this is a bit strange. Why are we going here? They go in, there's a football pitch there, and I presume it's the home pitch for the team called the Weah All Stars.
No. Yeah. So this is the Ministry of Defenders, perhaps?
they don't concede many.
No. The teams that George Weah's played for are amazing.
Yeah.
Have you ever bothered looking at the list?
Is this a game?
This is one of your games, isn't it?
Young Survivors Claretown.
Nice.
Bong Range United.
Mm-hmm.
Invincible 11.
When are we going to get to Monaco?
Yeah, then Monaco. No, he's played for some amazing teams.
Well, he's playing for the Weyer All-Stars at the moment.
Yeah.
The reporter said that he sits down, the game starts playing, there's someone commentating over the PA system and referring to George Weyer as His Excellency. Mm. And the match was played against a team of former local professional players. And the report wondered why no one was trying to tackle George Weyer. And he thought to himself...
Well, obviously you're not going to tackle him.
52-year-old George Weyer.
Yeah.
Well, he's thinking to himself, this must be some sort of presidential privilege, you know. And he went over at half-time to ask George Weyer to see if this was as he suspected. And the reply from Weyer was, no, they're afraid to mark me because I'm the best dribbler. And if they try, they will dislocate some of their body. I'm very fancy. I'm sorry, but if he thinks, now don't get me wrong, a phenomenal player at the height of his powers, but no 52-year-old man is twisting up some other opposition player to the point of he dislocates his joints.
I love the idea that anybody would not try to tackle somebody because they were too fancy.
Yeah. That's reason to tackle him. What did Christopher Ray say?
Well, so Christopher Ray, Jim, you'll remember him, former Arsenal player.
Vaguely.
Of course you do. Yeah. Scored the winning goal in an FA Cup semi-final, I believe. Have a bit of respect.
Moment.
Yeah. Well, he's had another moment here. He is the coach of this team. So, you know, he's still in the...
So he coaches a team that George Weyer turns up to have a regular run about. Run out.
It's named after George Weyer.
He coaches the George Weyer Vanity Project. One could
Didn't seem the type, did he?
No,
he really didn't.
I feel that George Weyer in a manager is looking for a yes man.
Yeah.
He's not even looking for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He's looking for Christopher Ray.
Does George Weyer play up front with his cousin?
You'd imagine so. Well, George Weyer is the
real
top
cousin or Ali Dia?
Oh yeah. George Weyer is the top scorer for this side, as you can imagine.
Can Ali Dia not even get in the George Weyer All-Star?
I don't know who their starting lineup. I don't even know who they got on the bench. But Christopher Ray was perhaps a little bit more honest when Mike Thompson, the reporter, asked him why no one was tackling George Weyer, and he said, no one tackles him. We do advise the team that you don't go into a tackle with the president. You avoid contact. No contact with the president.
Anyway, he's here now, so be quiet. George Weyer walks past. What were you saying? Nothing. I was saying that you're a brilliant dribbler and you're very fancy.
Sacked in the morning.
Yeah.
I've got 100% record. Yeah. There's nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
That's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, so I played for Milan and I was the, World Player of the Year and all that. And now I just like playing for people against people who won't tackle me. You know. Do you reckon he plays a video of that goal of him scoring from his own penalty area?
Yeah, look.
That's what I want from you today.
Yeah.
Just, there's a bit in the middle of the park.
I know someone tried to tackle me, and you'll see that they nearly stopped an amazing goal. Yeah. We don't want people to get in the way of great football.
We're not going home until we've recreated it.
A little known fact.
I'm not going to Madagascar until we've recreated
it. I don't care if it's a summit for all the African leaders. We're staying here until we get this right.
And a little known fact, that guy who tried to tackle him in the halfway line then, he dislocated every one of his joints. So do it at your own risk.
I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's very fancy.
It is very, very fancy. But do check out that report or that article as well, written by Mike Thompson.
We've given you the salient points.
I think so. Is he being a responsible leader for the country? Again, those points are perhaps addressed.
It's not for us to decide.
Not for us to decide.
We just do the football and the stupid stuff. It's a great job. We haven't got to worry about that.
We don't. And on that note, we're going to get out of here. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble. The preview show is, of course, out on Thursday. Thank you, Luke Moore.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim Campbell.
Thank you, guys.
And thank you, listeners. We'll see you on Thursday.
This was a Radio Staccato production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.